Welcome to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast. Our host, Oscar Endermo, will together with guests share proven, tested strategies for improving your life and business. At the end of each episode, you will learn how you can use technology to implement those strategies into your daily life. We want to help you bridge the gap from inspiration to implementation.
Hello, my friend. Welcome to another episode of the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast. In this episode, I sit down with my friend Stefan. And he's an author, speaker, and a shark diver. He has written 4 books and spoken around the world about strategy, innovation, and branding. A few years ago, he got fascinated by sharks, a species that's been around for more than 420 million years. We have a lot to learn from nature, and in Stefan's book, Sharkonomics, he shares strategies from sharks that you can apply to your own life and business. Stefan has been called a creative futurist, something that I really like because I love to speak to creative people and I love to hear about the future. We had a really interesting conversation, and I'm sure you will benefit from the things we discussed. As I'm recording this, COVID is spreading again in Europe, and it may be more important than ever to learn and apply the lessons from Shark into your business. Here we go. Stefan, welcome to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yes, it's nice to have you here. And we're in a beautiful hotel in the south part of Stockholm, close to where you live. So. Yeah. First, can you share a little bit, the listeners, what do you do? What is Stefan's title, creative futurist?
Well, a lot of people started to call me creative futurist because a lot of my ideas seems to be very creative, they think, and also that they happen. So what I talk about usually happen a couple of years later when I said it. So in the beginning, people are laughing and saying it's a bit too crazy, and I have a lot of examples in my books which are like a receipt and prove that I've written it before it happened. So it's a nice title to have, but I also do I do a lot of lectures, workshops, and consultancy, and I also work for different university and been guest professor and different things. So.
Yep. Now I've been reading your latest book, Sharkonomics, and been enjoying learning from you. So that's one of the books we're going to talk about. But you've written 4 books in total, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But you also told me before we put the mics on that you are dyslexic.
Yeah, highly dyslexic.
Highly dyslexic.
World-class dyslexic.
World-class. And you've written 4 books. How does that go together?
Yeah, it's extreme. Actually, it did take many years for me to actually be able to write my own name. Mm-hmm. That's how dyslexic I was. And then, of course, I decided, why not write my own books when I'm dyslexic? why make things too easy? So I started to write books, but I was so highly dyslexic that the software which I was writing with could not even...
autocorrect.
Actually, the software asked me, are you writing this book in Swedish, English, or Turkish? Otherwise, I cannot correct the words. That's how dyslexic I was. But I have a dream to meet that person who wrote that code. So if anyone knows that person, that's one of my goals in life, to meet that person. It's so beautiful. But I would say that this actually healed my dyslexic a lot, to write a lot, to read a lot, and after a while you get used to it and you know who to. But one thing that I think is really interesting, the one who proofread my book, they also got over a while also became dyslexic. So I have to shift them over the years.
Okay. But if I read your latest book, I'm not going to become dyslexic, am I?
No, I don't hope that. The only thing you're going to the only by effect of that book is that you're going to swim much better and faster.
Okay, excellent. So if we go back to younger Stefan, how did this dyslexics formed you?
Well, it was really, really hard to focus on school, and I can see that now when I go back to school and lecturing, that the students who are unmotivated are not too connected to the teaching and education. So they sit in the back, and many of them are very gifted. So I need to connect with them in another way. So that's. But also, I've learned much better from doing things than only reading things. And what I found is over the years, I developed my own speed technique to read fast, and I discovered that only maybe 20 pages of a book is new. The rest I've read in other books. So practically, I've gone through library after library and university after university, and I realized that we just repeating ourselves, we don't innovate, we don't change things, and there's only one species who write books. So that's why I started to ask if they have books of other species, and they looked at me as I was crazy, which may be a good thing sometimes, but. Then I turned to nature and I found sharks, and they've been around for 420 million of years, and I have a lot to learn from them, and that's how my journey started. But I also were I'm not shy, so I called a lot of authors up and I emailed them, and I said if I could have a lot of questions. I think my personality when I was about 2 years old, I'm sort of stuck in that age where you ask a lot of questions, you want to know everything, and I've been to that in that stage all my life.
So we had Professor Unestål a few times on the podcast, and he says that in Swedish there's only one word for it, it's barnsligt, which is negative, but in English you have childlike and childish.
Yeah.
And childlike is actually a good quality, especially in these days. So it sounds like you're childlike, and that you can, and childlike meaning being creative and, you know, thinking like seeing the world in different ways. And
It's very interesting, and I also he's brilliant, and I think it's very important to realize that even grown-ups need to play. And by playing and accepting the child in you, you will keep the open eyes and see new opportunities all the time. So that's what I do a lot. I play and have fun. And also when I worked with people in science, people in innovation, they told me that a sense of humor is very important in an organization and personalities, but because that's open up your mind. So it's very important.
So based on this, I assume that maybe the traditional schooling didn't come that easy, but I met other dyslexic people that are really successful entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So I mean, like Richard Branson is one example that everyone talks about. You know that he was dyslexic, but he's one of the most successful entrepreneurs there is.
Yeah.
So in the school system, what do you think the school can do to, you know, everyone is different and have different ways of learning. How do you think they should adjust to this?
Well, what I found is a really simple thing to do is actually do things in real life instead of reading about things. It's much easier for me to do things in real life. So, for instance, if I read about swimming with sharks, it's much easier for me to actually jump into the water and feel the elements. And if you're reading about history, for instance, you can go to the places where you're reading about. So, and that would be much more a wow factor for kids to actually go to different places. And maybe you don't need to go to the historical places. You can go to a place which are close to the school. If you talk about the sea, maybe you can go to a beach or to water, and you can have the education there. So all the kids can understand. They can feel the water. They can feel the elements.
That would be really good, actually. And I think in today's world, you could also use virtual reality. So, for example, you go to Egypt in virtual reality and you experience the pyramids, and instead of just reading a book or listening to a teacher talking, you know, like.
Yeah, and I actually did go to a dyslexic school. They have that today, and they developed softwares, which are much more visual, and so the kids can learn much better.
But do you think you became more creative because of this, or how did you develop your creative side and your childlike capacities?
Yeah, actually, I think so. But at the same time, many people ask me, do you have to be dyslexic to be creative?
Yeah,
and I
exactly.
say, no.
Is it a superpower?
yeah. No. And do you have to have all these diagnoses to be creative or being even an entrepreneur, as people ask me? Because a lot of entrepreneurs like Richard Branson get famous and they have this diagnostic superpowers. But I think it's not about that. It's about... for me, I've done interviews with people working with brain and psychology and so on, science, and they told me something interesting, because I think in pictures, and they said that probably when you were a kid, you learn how to compensate what you did not have. It's like if you're blind, you will hear more things because you don't have a choice. Mm. And it's the same for me, because I cannot read as fast as the other kids. I developed a skill that I could see pictures, and I developed fast reading for myself to see the points. So actually I don't read a page, I scan the page and looking for different keywords so I understand what it's all about.
So that's how you speed read then?
It's classical speed reading, many people would say. But I think it's, for me, it's extremely easy to break things down in parts and put them together in a new pattern. Mm. Which would make me a world-class hacker if I had that interest, probably. Mm, mm. Because the people who work with software, they're extremely working by the book. So for me, it's so easy to break that down and put it together in a new pattern. So,
Sharks. So you written a book called Sharkonomics, and I know you're interested in sharks. Where did that start? Was it Jaws in the 70s or...? Because, I mean, everyone watched it in Sweden, and I was scared of swimming in Sweden, even though there was no sharks here.
Yeah. Actually, I've always been interested in animals that's been around for a long time. And there is a bit of a debate about that it seems like kids are always interested in dinosaurs. Mm. And actually, the sharks have been around longer than even most of the dinosaurs. They've been hanging with them and seeing them coming and going. And even if
in the same format or in a...
They've developed over the years. So but at that time, there were more bigger sharks, bigger species, because the prey was bigger. But they've developed over the time. So at that time, they're speculating that they've been about 20 meters long. But they can't afford to be that big because the prey are not that big anymore. So they sort of balance to what's happening with their prey.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So, but I've always been interested in sharks and crocodiles and those animals, and I think they're so smart. Mm. And I also think that we as a species are very arrogant, because we always think we are the smartest creature on Earth. But if you look at nature's program and you start to study nature, you see that what you see on television is sort of a... it's not really what it's about. It's more about nature is much more practical, much more brutal, and maybe not so emotional that we are. We like to see nature as a nice holiday park or something, but it's much more practical.
So you went diving with sharks?
Yeah, I did.
How was that experience?
That was amazing. I sort of forget that it can be dangerous, because I think they were so beautiful, so perfect, and actually their name, their Latin name is named from Carl von Linné, another Swedish guy. So I was the one naming them Sharkonomics. So we connected. But it was amazing to swim with them. So I started them for 3 years, practically 24/7. And I worked with the best shark expert in the world, because you cannot find serious books about sharks anywhere on Earth if you don't have the connections to the academic world, because our fear for nature is big business. Mm. So after the movie, the fear factor started to explore sharks, especially the great white sharks. So they nearly disappeared because of it. So. And so I started them. I did take diving certification, and I jumped into the water inside South Africa with them. And I met the best sharks expert there is in the world. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I had about 30 kilos more of flesh on me. Mm-hmm. So they liked me a bit too much.
Yummy, yummy.
So I became less dyslexic, and I dropped weight by working with books. So I highly recommend it to everyone. It's good.
But that was white sharks that you dive with there?
Great white sharks. And I learned that you don't want to be the most fleshy one in the water, because then you become the number one prey. So that's...
okay. So that's... And they do eat humans from time to time. Is that... by accident, or like, I know they'd like to take surfers from time to time, no?
Depends how good they serve, you know. So. No, but to be serious, actually nature has been really, really good to us as a species, because we are not a really good prey. Mm-hmm. It's too much bone and it's too little flesh, which most animals don't like. So we are not a good prey.
So, but maybe it's changing now, because most of us are getting obese and overweight. And
yeah, so yeah, some, yeah. That's the best news for shark news, so to say. Exactly. But at the same time, we're not really. Actually, and we can be dangerous because we are quite smart. So we dive two and two, and they like to take a single prey, which are lost from the flock. We're not really a good prey, but if we have a lot of flesh on us, it could be so. But normally, they go for other species, and there are actually more people getting killed by cars than sharks. So the problem for sharks is that movie. And that they look really dangerous, some of them, compared to the ice bear, which looks wonderful, but are really, really dangerous. So
Jaws, was it Steven Spielberg that wrote Jaws? Steven Spielberg?
He directed it.
Directed it. So for the younger generation, if you haven't seen Jaws, it's a classic movie from the 70s that made the whole world scared of sharks getting into the water.
Yeah, even today I meet people who cannot take a bath at their home if they don't see the water through the water, because they're so scared of sharks. But actually, the one Peter who wrote the book, the manuscript, he basically spent the rest of his life working against killing sharks and to save them. And they were very important, because if shark disappears, the top predator in the marine water, the whole system collapses. And if the system collapses in the water, it will collapse on land. So, and I think human species are not connected to nature, and that's a problem for the whole world and also for us.
Yeah, nature is perfect, the way it's set up. No?
Yeah, it's totally perfect, and actually it feels like a job setup, the whole interview, because behind you there's people swimming and bathing.
I put you there on purpose.
Yeah, so you can look at I think that's
look
that's,
at the ocean and
yeah, I can hear the music. Dum, 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 yeah,
exactly. Dum, dum. So for the listeners, Stefan is watching the swimming pool at Klarälvskonstull.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's looking at the bikini girls or if he's looking at me when we do the interview.
No.
He's thinking about sharks and
I'm thinking about sharks. That's.
So when you started to study sharks, did you see the connection with business life from the beginning, or was that something that came later? That, because in sharkonomics you talk about lessons from the sharks that we can apply in business.
Yeah, actually, because I'm living in Sweden and we are sort of a consensus culture, so people don't disagree in meetings, but I do as a personality. And the rumors start to spread that I was the one always challenging the leaders and everyone, and nearly get kicked every week for my work when I worked in a big corporation. And every Friday, me and my boss, we had a meeting, and he went through everyone in the organization that want to kick me, fire me. And sort of, it was a tradition.
Troublemaker.
We were drinking coffee and having a good time. So there's only 10 want to fire you this week, Stefan. and so rumors start to spread in the business world community that this guy is probably the craziest one. He wants to challenge the strategy and everything, and they weren't used to that, to have that kind of personality on the inside. So I started to get calls from different directors and different board members and other organizations. Can you come to us and sort of challenge us and tell us how should you attack us and how should you challenge our strategy? Because we're fat and happy. We're the market leader. We're number one or number two. And I'm getting more of those calls, and they want to pay me quite good money. And I couldn't find good strategies in the books, because the books were old. Models and old strategies from Second World War and so on. But what I found is really interesting, that we as a species, we don't challenge our strategies and the way they work, how we work, because it takes more energy to invent new things. And also the academic systems are very old school in many ways.
Fat and happy, like you say. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It's easy to get fat and happy. And a lot of organizations are fat and happy. So I try to find good strategies, but I turn to nature and I found sharks, which have great, easy to learn strategies, because sharks, they don't do PowerPoints, they take a bite and they move on. So yeah. And I like that, easy, you know.
Yeah. So if you take for example Nokia, they're back in, was it 2008 when they were the market leader, and the same year the iPhone was released.
Yeah.
And how can you know that you're fat and lazy?
What I do many times, I sit in a meeting and I close my eyes, because then I can hear better what they're saying, and I can hear how they talk to each other if they moved into a culture of denial. Yeah. And denial is what they're saying in Jim Collins' books and science, that you deny the risk of the need to change. So people don't like to change. So instead of attacking the needs to change, because there was a lot of reports that people did not had, they want something else from the mobile phone and so on. And when they don't listen to that, they think that everything is fine. And then the change is coming very brutal. So for instance, Apple did a test bite with their first phone with Motorola, putting iTunes in the phone. That's how sharks works. They go for a test bite. And then when they backed off, Nokia thought everything was fine. But that is called the killing zone. You need to get out the killing zones. The sharks is always coming back. So the shark came back, Apple came back with Steve Jobs in the jobs, and they were doing a killing bite with iPhone, and everything changed. But there are signs long before change happened. For instance, Napster been there for many years before iTunes, Spotify and iTunes and the Pirate Bay were there many years before Netflix and so on. So the signs are there. So everything is about confronting reality, and that's what I do. I confront reality, and I see, for instance, that we're moving into a digital society. We talk about smart cities today, but the whole society is getting digital, and the government, they don't understand this, security don't understand this, and there's a lot of things in society that is not connected to change. It's not only corporations. And this is good opportunity for the criminal world, because they are much faster to adapt than the corporate world. In the corporate world, you have quite slow adaption speed. In the criminal world, you cannot afford that. And this causes a lot of problems in society, I think. But it's a lot of positive opportunities also, depending on how you want to look at it.
So to stay innovative, what can you learn from the sharks to stay innovative?
Never stand still. I've been doing this workshop for most parts of the world, and I always ask what leads to trouble, and they always say the same thing: we get stuck in history. And that's human behavior, in my opinion, because when things go good, we wire to lean back, and that's always leads to trouble. And it's the same with personal development also. If you get stuck in your own personal development, you become a prey for other ones to feed on. So it's the same for a corporation.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it now with COVID, because I have a lot of friends in the hotel and event industry. Yeah. And many of them have only worked in that industry, and they haven't been moving.
Yeah.
They haven't learned anything new. They haven't... And now it's very, very difficult, you know. So if you don't constantly, also as an individual, move, I think it'd be tough, because everything is changing so fast. And how could we predict the COVID, you know?
Yeah. And we're sitting here today in an early empty hotel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's very interesting, because now is the best time to actually change for real. And now our people really into creativity, but it can also be a problem, because when you create it because you have to, it can be very desperate. And then when you're desperate, dealing with sharks, it's easier for them to attack you because you will show weaknesses also. So it's better to, if you have an organization, if you're number one, number two in your business field, doesn't matter what field it is, you're always in trouble because it's so hard to have the speed to develop. It's so hard to motivate management to move on. For instance, Apple is probably number one in their field, mm-hmm. but after Steve Jobs, I don't think they have the speed enough with innovation. So yeah. other sharks that Samsung and so on, they move past them when it yeah. comes to innovation.
It seems like Apple been doing like small improvements, but nothing like really unique and innovative no. after Steve Jobs.
No, and the problem is that their fans and their customers, they're loyal to innovation. Mm. And the only thing that's innovating now is the price. You know? So it's,
yeah, exactly.
So it's, yeah. That's a huge problem.
Yeah, and how many lenses on the camera and on the phone? You know? So
yeah, you have to have a detective to see what's new. You know.
So yeah. No. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, when the iPhone came 2008, and if you looked at different phones, the iPhone looked completely different than all the other phones.
Yeah.
But now, if you go to the store and you look at all the Android phones, they all look the same. You know this.
Yeah, yeah, and even so, it's as an Apple user, you always been used to that. You were, if you go to a party and so, people would ask you about the wow factors you can do with an Apple product. But today, there are other ones that's ahead of them, and that's the opposite of loyalty. Yeah. So they're vulnerable for attack from Samsung or from one who are ahead in innovation. And now, but the problems with the other ones that they, most of them, the other brands, they don't understand emotional values to a brand. They don't understand people who not are technicians. So the information is more for technicians than for users, normal people. So Apple have not educated their customers into technology.
Mm. So now, for example, Samsung has a new foldable phone. I don't know if you've seen that one that you can fold.
Yeah.
And for me, it feels not really sexy. I don't know. That's my personal opinion. And I don't think it's going to sell that well. That's my opinion. But so as a big organization, how do you evaluate the products that you release on the market?
And by the way, that phone I developed about 10 years ago, and I have it in my book, but I did it for... together with Joakim Novall and Claes Andreasson, I did that phone for Nokia because I think it was like connecting people. Mm-hmm. So a phone looking like that. So, and you should also Samsung has a phone now. You can load the batteries by putting them together. That's what I did for connecting people, Nokia. Mm-hmm. But I think how they should use that is that they should connect the technology with human values.
Mm.
But today a lot of products are done by connected it with technology values, and that doesn't go good for most people. It goes good for the tech people, and the problem with the tech people that they're not many enough.
Mm.
So I think that's for instance, now when I do a lot of webinars and I see that, and I'm building my own studio, I see that the technology is developed for technology, not for me as a speaker, and that makes me crazy.
Mm. Yeah, wasn't that one of Steve Jobs' strengths, that he could kind of bridge the engineers and the market with what the market actually wanted, you know?
Yeah, he's a legendary, immortal genius, he's fantastic.
Yeah. So you have more lessons from sharks. What are like some other lessons that we can learn from the sharks that we can apply in our lives and our business?
Yes. So basically what I did is I studied sharks who's been around for 420 millions of years, and I boiled it down to 10 attack strategies, very simple ones. And for instance, instead of swimming directly to your prey and attack them, you can swim around in a stealth mode, so there's no defense around it. But then I found also something interesting, and that goes for all the preys in the world. They have actually defense strategies, and organizations, they don't have any defense. because we're educating people, we're paying people to attack marketing and sales. We don't have a defense department.
Yeah.
We only have defense when it comes to homo sapiens, when it comes to sport and military, not to business. I believe this is the, I'm the only one in the world holding defense workshops for organizations. I think there will be hundreds of books, and I also think that we'll have a board member in the organization, which are defense director.
Head of defense, interesting.
Head of defense. It's very important, and that's why it's so easy to attack them.
So
many times when they hire me, they always go, in the beginning, we did both the mistake, both me and the clients, they were saying to me, Stefan, you don't have a chance, so we will pay you even more than normal if you can attack us brutally. And they nearly start crying after 5 minutes. And I realized that's not the good mood to have your clients in. So normally now what I try to set up the level, how brutal I should attack them. But the thing is, I love, for instance, the blind spot. That's one way to attack them, to move around and looking for the blind spot which they have not detected. Actually, what I do is I attack them as a hacker testing the firewall, but I attack the business model. So it's very simple and very concrete. So, and they think it's cheaper to pay me than to be eaten alive by competitors. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
But now with digital, for instance, with Sharkonomics 2, and one of the key points with it is that we're all in the same water, digital waters, because of digitalization, sharks, digital sharks as Amazon and Alibaba and Google, they can be in every business field, in every nation, and even they can go past the laws of different countries.
Mm.
So it's a new world where you have to defend yourself a lot. Mm. For instance, the Swedish major brands as ICA and so on, the retail brands, they've been very not changeable over the world, over the years. But now when Amazon comes here, suddenly they want to change, as you point with the hotel business.
Mm.
So.
Mm. So Sweden is many times ranked like top three on innovation on different index things, you know.
Yeah.
So Sweden is considered a very innovative country, and we have this consensus culture that you mentioned.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by natural culture. That's one of the topics that I teach, and you have the consensus culture, but you also have avoiding conflict. And I think the consensus culture is really good for innovation because everyone can contribute and everyone is okay to speak up. But then you also have the avoiding conflict. And don't you need a little bit of conflict to stay innovative? Like you were saying that you were a little bit stirring up some emotions when you were working in big organizations.
Yeah, that's the thing, that a lot of organizations, they need people like me, the one who can go into conflict and drive from that. But since we are a consensus culture, they cannot handle that type of personality. So instead of the same employer that wanted to fire me many years ago, they hire me now because they can handle me as a consultant.
Okay.
Easier to kick me out.
Yeah.
And I don't get paid for my invoices if I do bite them too much. So that's very important. So we need people who are not consensus to move on. But I think also one problem with the fantastic innovating culture we have in Sweden, which are world class, I would say, and always been world class in my lifetime, is that we're a bit fat and happy, simply, because we had it so good for a long time. And the same goes for Germany and a lot of countries which are having a good economic situation over generations. And then people get a bit lazy. We know that we are really good, but if you take in great innovation, for instance, as Spotify, they were unique, but today the other ones have catch up to them, and maybe they're not unique anymore. And if you go for Skype, for instance, which were world class unique, you can make a phone call over internet and so on. I think you can do that with every app there is.
There's nothing unique with them anymore.
So every time you have an innovation, the time gap to capitalize on it getting shorter and shorter. So you need so much more skills today than before.
Mm.
So I think in Sweden we really need to be have much more skills. We need to be much more hungry, and that's why we need to be more sharks.
Yeah,
we need to be hungry, and so.
So sharkonomics applies to countries as well, the government.
Yeah, it does, and even I'm getting more and more requests from politicians to use the strategies in sharkonomics and in how, because they are in deadly waters too.
Okay.
It's very hard competition to be a politician.
But what about the government agencies? Have you done work with government agencies? Because for some, sometimes it's not so much innovation in the government agencies.
Well, I'm not allowed to say. But you can say that the need is there.
And like we're dealing with the migration office in Sweden now, because we moved from Dubai here and we're doing the paperwork for my wife. And it's not really, it feels like it's a 30-year-old model, you know. Like we had to send, this should be digitalized already when we did the application from the embassy in Abu Dhabi in July. It should be digitalized. Instead, we're sending snail mail, like old school, you know, and someone had to sort all these mails. And so it feels like the government agencies may not be open to sharkonomics, but they need it, I think.
I've done some work for government in Dubai, a smaller project, but have not worked with a bigger project there. But I'm getting a lot of requests from them. But if we take Sweden as an example, you can see that a lot of the government organizations are private, making them private, and getting them into the competition water. So that's one thing. What's happening? To get faster, but I think it's but also when you've been stuck for a long time and suddenly you start to move, there's always a risk that things will change both to the good and to the bad. So it's always a problem, but you can see that the biggest digital giants in the world actually have more power today than a lot of governments. And I think that's a problem which will lead to change. And also I've done interviews with people working with Secret Service in different countries, and I think their level of strategy is so much better than the corporate world, because if you work with Secret Service or military, people actually will die if you don't have a good strategy. So I think there's a lot of skills there, but sadly not a lot of the government organization, they don't have enough resources to work fast.
Now I think your work would be good in Dubai, because they have a lot of competition between the government agencies, and they work a lot with improving each agency, and they have KPIs for all this, and they still have a lot of things to improve on, but they have a system to like make it competitive between the agencies, and they do awards every year and all. So it's
I think what's making what could make Dubai much faster than Sweden is that they don't have a long history. Because that's one of the factors I look at. The longer history an organization have, or also the bigger they are, the more stuck to history they tend to be. So that's why my book is selling probably the best ever in the world is in China, in Mandarin and Cantonese, because they have a jungle look at business, if you say so. They're not stuck in history. So every nation culture that's not stuck in history are more open and willing and often more hungry to change. And if you have a long history, people tend to protect their history instead of moving into the future. So that's why I can attack them from their history of mistakes, because we as a species, we don't learn from history. We always repeat ourselves in 99% of the time. So I would just follow the boat, and I know something good would drop in the water. That's how a shark works, and that's how I work.
On an individual level, as an individual, what can I learn from sharks to become better as a person, happier, more successful?
Well, you could, for instance, don't get stuck in your own history. If you're on LinkedIn, maybe you should not write so much about what you have been doing. Instead, you should write articles about what you want to do. So sharks, they never get stuck. They always look for the next big thing and the next prey. And we as a human, we tend to look backwards and not forward. And so by visualizing what you want to do, and visualizing for other people that you have the skills for moving forward, it's more easy for you to move forward. But also what I do is, a shark, what they do, they look under the surface. And if you look at the surface today, everybody's talking about AI and blockchains and technology and digitalization. But if you look below the surface, you will see there's bigger things are going on than only digitalization. You will see a new society, which need new security and new improvement that's not around today. So there's a lot of business opportunity for those who like to move forward. And I think in, for instance, when it comes to personal development, I believe that in big organization, we're gonna have much more people working with therapy and with, especially after COVID, and personal coaching and mental health requirement, if you say so. I think that would be for all the top leaders. They will have a personal coach, which are top level in therapy and so on. I think that's what's going to be.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, no, I met someone from Ericsson the other day, and now they're all working from home, and that's a big organization, and you know they can come to the office, but they had to kind of say if they're coming or something like this, and that changes a lot of things. You know, sitting at home working by yourself instead of going to the office, and
It does. So it does, and do you have the time to rethink what you really want to do in life? Some people I know, they're going through a lot of crisis right now because they realize that if not work is the most important thing in life, what's really important for me then? So it's really interesting because a lot of things are coming up to the surface and now, which has been far below, and that's and the need for personal development is huge. And this will affect, I believe, consumption.
Okay.
Because consumption is very connected to shallow values, but if consumption will be connected to deeper values, we will see a lot of shifting trends in how we consume things. And we will look for things to buy which are much more connected to deeper things, saving Earth and saving our souls and so on. So we're looking for meaning in consumption, I think.
Yeah, okay, in consumption, yeah. What are some other trends that you see in for the future that maybe we should look out for, like if you look ahead?
Well, I think that the big social media platforms will have some problems. And I think one trend is that people are getting enough of being spied on by their smartphone and social media. So I think there is a need for change in that sense. And instead of having technology falling in us and being a spy, we need technology that will embrace life and give us good values, I think. And I think other trends are, of course, that is positive, is if technology can help us have a better life and so. And other trends, I believe, is that after COVID, I think a lot of people will value free time more than work. Also working from home is getting better and better and more effective and so on.
Yeah, so it seems like a lot of people want to have a kind of like a combination, so they can work 2 days from home and 3 days in the office or something like this. So they get the social part, but then working from home with no disturbances
I think a lot of social behavior and will change, improve, and one thing that we can see now that it's a lot of extremely many people are buying dogs, and that's interesting. And also, I guess the therapist who can actually crack the code why we did buy toilet paper will probably get the Nobel Prize one day, I think.
Yeah.
But a lot of things are changing. I think what Google started with Google Downtown, which I started to talk about 2006, they're building that now in Toronto with smart cities. I think that that is the start of something big changing in our society. But I don't think Google did handle it perfectly, but there are others who will maybe do so in the future.
Mm. So how will a smart city like this look like?
Yeah, it's really important that it not become a George Orwell's 1984 city. And
yeah.
That's very important. And that's why most of the digital big corporations in the world, they're too hungry for data. They don't understand that people want values.
Mm.
They don't want to be spied on. So that's a huge problem for them. But I think a good digital city will know what you want and will serve you without spying on you.
Mm.
So that's will know what your body need to eat today, for instance. So it will be perfect for your health and balance your health. And even that computer software will talk with your doctor and balance that perfect. And every time you go to the restroom, it will be a loop back to your personal data, so they know what you're going to eat the next day and so on. So everything will be connected.
Yeah.
And I wish, and I know that we don't have a choice. We need to connect the whole world with technology compared to the nature.
Mm.
So we need to connect us as a species with nature, and one way of doing that is using technology. So and that's we're gonna have maybe we're gonna replace different species with robots. I think, because they're so important that they cannot disappear, because then the whole system will collapse.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and if sharks disappear, we need robot sharks in the water. I never said this before, but that's how nature works.
To balance the ecosystem. Yeah.
We need to balance the ecosystem in one way and on another, and technology, I will believe, will be that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. From a small business owner, and we can use what I'm doing as an example, strategic tech coaching. So strategic tech coaching is the coaching modality that I'm working with, and it's basically compiling the best strategies for personal development, for mental health. And so I use strategies from Unestol, mental training, positive psychology, and then we use technology and coaching to implement them into your daily life.
Yeah.
Because it's not about knowing these strategies, it's about using them every day.
Yeah.
And if I want to use Sharkonomics to reach more people with strategic tech coaching, because I want this to be a global movement that we use technology for good, for mental health, with different applications and these kind of things. So.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, I think when I do lecture and workshop for big corporation, they have certain needs, and when it comes to smaller corporations, they don't have the problems yet, which the big ones have, because
it's culture, different problems. Yeah,
culture, leadership, and so on always lack up. If you grow as a startup, you're always getting in trouble with that field most of the time, because you don't have the skills yet. But when it comes to smaller sharks, they have different strategies, and I also developed that in the book and online. But they have all. Most of them, they have the hunger, they have the speed, but what they don't have is the focus. To have the right focus, as you said, the mindset on what should I focus on today as an entrepreneur to move on to tomorrow, and how do I line up my focus, my strategies, so everything I do today and tomorrow leads to a bigger goal. And also you need to fear your fear factor in what you're doing. So maybe some of them, which I meet a lot of startups, maybe some of them are scared to grow, because they know that if I'm the CEO, I maybe grow out of my skills. So sharks, they never go too personal. They don't think they don't see things very personal or emotional. So that's important to learn from sharks. If you see an innovation personal, you see them as your kids, they're perfect. They're never perfect as an innovation. Innovation always needs to improve, otherwise it will get out of date. Mm. So that's something you can learn from sharks. The old saying, it's not personal, it's business. Mm. Is sharks to do that even better because they have a distance to what they do. So maybe you should ask yourself, if I was a shark going to my office, what should I change today? Mm. And then when you look at it that way, you will see that maybe there are some people that should do something else in life. And maybe there are some clients that someone else should have. And maybe we should change 50% of what we're doing to move faster for tomorrow. Mm. So that's the key learning. And how should we defend what we have? So, and how vulnerable are we? Are we a prey or are we sharks? And one thing I talk with all the organizations is the speed of evolution. Do you move, how fast do you move towards the future, I ask them. Is it zero or is it 100 kilometers an hour? And most of them say 50. And 50 is not enough if you're in high competition because you're going to be passed quite quickly. You need to move very fast. But moving with innovation is not enough. You need a lot of different skills. If you should compete with, for instance, with companies that building good tribe and branding and emotional, it's not enough with technology. You need to have your fans, you need to have your clients close to you. And what most people don't see is that actually the sharks are having a really close relationship with their preys. And there is, over time, you can see that there is a competition because the prey do develop better defense strategies and the sharks develop better attack skills. And I think that's really important. But by working, another book I wrote is called One, A Consumer Revolution for Business. I always work with both of them in my workshop because if you work close with your customers, with open innovation, involve them with what you're doing, you will get more loyal customers and clients. And that's very important, especially if you're a smaller business. If you have a close relationship with them, they will not leave you for a better product or service. They will have a closer connection to you.
Okay. If you had a magic wand and you could teach something to everyone on this planet, what would you teach them?
I will teach them the knowledge of not knowing. And that's one of my dreams, to have a university called Not Knowing. Because it's so important to know what you don't know. And most people, they feel that they know everything, and that makes them really easy to attack. Their blind spot increases if they think they know everything. Mm. Many times I attack from the not knowing side of life, and that's very important, because if you don't know, then you know your vulnerability, and that's very important. Mm. It makes you humble, and I think the humbleness in Swedish culture is maybe one of the most important things when it comes to innovation, because everyone can speak up in Sweden and tell their ideas for the corporation. That's unique.
Yeah.
In many countries, you cannot. You get fired if you do that, even if it's good. Mm. So that's very good in Sweden, actually.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah. Anything else, or?
To quote Steve Jobs, he said, "Well, stay hungry."
Stay hungry, exactly. Yeah. That's what the sharks are doing, and lots of lessons. And if they want to buy the book Sharkonomics, where would they go?
Well, it's sold over the world and at Amazon and different places. But if they go to sharkonomics.com, they can download the first chapter and so on, and they can find the book in different language editions and so. And it's coming out and. Have requests. It's 6 language editions, and it's coming out in 8 or 9 more.
Okay, excellent. So, yeah. And if a company want to hire you to come and bite them a little bit, test their business idea and do some workshops with them, go to sharkonomics.com, or where's the best way to find Stefan?
They can go to sharkonomics.com, they can go to detectivemarketing.com or stefanengeset.com, and they will find information, and or they can jump into a shark cage and just call my name and I'll be there.
I hope we can get down to Dubai together. Yeah. Maybe do some work down there. It would be interesting because I think Sharkonomics is needed all over the world. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Oscar. Really great to be here.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you can take some of these strategies and apply it to your own life. Stay hungry and never stand still. From my side, I'm excited to share some news about a new product that I have. Because of COVID, people around the world have been forced to work from home. This provides plenty of new challenges. Working from home has many positive sides, but also many negative sides. I have personally worked from home for more than 10 years. I've experienced all the ups and downs. The advantages of not having any commute, no colleagues that disturbs me, the freedom to plan my day as I wish, and working from my underwear if I want to. But I also face plenty of challenges, like feeling lonely, getting distracted, lacking focus, not having any clear boundary between work and private life. There are plenty of challenges working from home. One of the things that I realized over the years is that it's very important to manage my energy when working from home. There are many ways to do this, and I have been forced to become an expert on this. Because of this, I have launched a team development activity with the focus on managing and boosting your energy while working from home. The training will be done over 3 weeks' time with a weekly connection over Zoom. I also have a longer alternative that we will do over 7 weeks and include mental training in between the sessions. Mental training is one of the best ways to boost your energy. If this sounds interesting for you and your team, drop me an email at oscar@strategictechcoaching.com, and that's Oscar with a K, oscar@strategictechcoaching.com, and in the subject line put Team Energy Boost. I also turned this into a coaching program, and it will be the same format. Either we meet 3 times or 7 times, and with the 7 times we include the mental training in between the session. If this sounds interesting, use the same email but put energy coaching in the subject line. That is oscar@strategictechcoaching.com. As always, follow the journey on Instagram, Strategic Tech Coaching, YouTube, same thing, and also leave a review on iTunes or whatever podcast player you are using to listen to this. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Strategic Tech Coaching Podcast with your host, Oscar Ndermo. We'll catch you next time.